From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of April, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Illinois Extension field crops entomologist Nick Sider will be here with some information about the seed corn maggot in both corn and soybean fields and how effective seed treatments can and maybe cannot be against that particular insect, depending on conditions in the field. And then we'll discuss the agricultural economics of fertilizers and monopoly power for pricing there. That with Carl Zuloff, Professor Emeritus from The Ohio State University, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn settled at $7.90 1/4, up 6 3/4. December at $7.35 1/4, half a cent lower. May beans at $16.82 1/4, 6 1/4 higher. And November at $15.01 1/2, down 4 1/4. The soft red winter wheat down 16 3/4 at $11.04 1/2 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures were down 45 cents. Feeders were down 17 1/2, and lean hogs were up 87 1/2 cents. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us from Windsor, Illinois. You're not in the field today, Matt, is my guess, because the rainfall yesterday. Have you been in the field at all yet?
No, we have not. We've been close a couple of times, but we just haven't been able to quite get over the hump yet. It looks like maybe we'll get a window next week. We didn't quite get as much as what they thought we might get yesterday, around 1 inch everywhere, and I know that originally they were calling for 1 to 3, so at least we're on the lower end of the range.
Soil temperatures are still cool, but I don't suppose that'll slow people down at this point.
I think as soon as it's dry enough to run, there'll be a lot of beans go in the ground right off the bat, and then, you know, I suppose a lot of folks will be planting corn and beans at the same time, but I've been hearing a lot of people saying, man, they wish they could get their beans in the ground, and, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was the opposite.
Yeah, it still feels odd to me for people to be saying that as they get into this part of April and are wanting to put soybean in the ground before they get to corn, but I know that that's the way things have gone recently. In Chicago, what did the trade look like today?
Well, it wasn't super exciting, to be honest with you. I mean, corn, as it has done lately, actually performed better than beans did, relatively speaking. Nothing near as exciting as what we've seen of late, but we still saw, you know, a fair amount of buying come into the trade, you know, at different times. I do think that there were some folks that decided to start the weekend a little early, quite frankly, because, you know, the volume wasn't incredible by any means, but saw your front months actually gaining on your deferred months. So, you know, May, July, they led the way. You still had D's corn closing higher. I mean, you look over at 23, and it looks to me like we don't have the settle as we speak, but it looks to me like this would be the 21st day in a row that we've seen D's 23 settle higher. So it's just been an incredible run there. But yeah, beans really didn't do much. Pretty quiet. Other than front month May, everything else was down just a shade.
Yeah, just a quick reminder that the markets are closed in observance of Good Friday tomorrow. They'll reopen on Sunday evening into Monday for regular trade. A long weekend sometimes can cause problems. It can mean people just even up. You said people vacated at this point, but it doesn't sound like really much is going to take place over the weekend unless there's something happen in Ukraine or other parts of the world, I would guess.
Yeah, I would guess so. You know, next week your May options go off the board. I think you know, it sure looks to me like they're going to try to make a run at this $8 level. 7.91 is where the last trade is that I'm showing. Again, we haven't settled yet, quite there yet. But regardless, I mean, I don't see anything major coming in. To me, it's pretty tough to get bearish the corn market if we haven't been able to plant in earnest yet. I know there's a lot of angst as to how, you know, are we going to be able to plant more acreage than what the USDA said with the 89.5? And I think you've got to have really good weather for that to be the case, especially with the headwind that has been created with fertilizer. Now, corn's worked overtime since late February, definitely rallied versus soybeans substantially more. I mean, we went from about a 2 2-to-1 ratio at one time, or a 2.5-to-1 ratio at one time, pushing closer to 2-to-1 at times here over the last couple of weeks. So there's no doubt that there's producers that are looking at this corn. If they could get in the field, in my opinion, they're still going to be able to pay for the fertilizer and make more money. But I think it's going to have to be in your really strong producing state. So weather is super important over the next, 3 to 4 weeks.
Have you checked what do you know about availability of fertilizers at this time?
Well, what most people are telling me is that you could certainly get a hold of the anhydrous. Now, most people, if they're going to switch over acreage, are probably not going to be near as worried about getting the dry on as what they would be the anhydrous ammonia. They can go a year without the dry, and I would assume to make some of their budgets work, they'll either run a cut rate or, just leave it out altogether. It would be a presumption that I might have with some people. Now, we all know you're going to need a nitrogen source in there somewhere. Most of the quotes I've seen over the last few days have been in that 16.25 to 16.50 range. And so it's certainly going to cost you a pretty penny to put your nitrogen out. But I do think you can get a hold of what you need, at least in this part of the world for right now.
Do you think there might be some shift back to corn in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, that core set of states that normally would raise under pretty good conditions corn?
I would have thought that would be the case if you would have had early planting with really good weather. Now, you know as well as I do, Todd, that even if we dry out, if we're still looking at these cool temps and temperatures down into the 30s on the overnight, it just doesn't get you super excited to go out and plant corn. Now, I know a lot of us have planted beans into very cold conditions over the last couple of years and actually got along fairly well, but it just seems like corn doesn't enjoy that near as much. So let's say the forecast come in on Monday or Tuesday and they say, hey, we're actually going to warm up. This spring's going to really spring big time. You'll be able to say spring has sprung or whatever it is. We're going to get warm. If that's the case, Todd, I think that, yes, you could switch a few acres, but you're going to need really good weather, in my opinion, to get people excited to pay those big fertilizer costs. I think with ideal planting conditions, we'll switch some acres, but Mother Nature's going to be in control of that.
Come back to old crop for me. You say, the May expiry next week might approach $8. What does basis look like for spot bid at this time?
Basis has actually improved this week. And so we've seen some basis levels in our part of the world improve anywhere from 5 to 7 cents. You look at other parts of the country, and there's definitely really strong basis levels, for instance, around some of your river terminals. So, I've tracked this pretty closely, and I would tell you that you get into, for instance, the St. Louis River market, and you've got over $8 bids handily at this stage of the game. I believe the bid as we speak is around 8.20 for cash corn down at St. Louis. And so, ADM Decatur is running 22 over the May, so they're over $8 as well. So there's a lot of $8 cash bids out there. It's interesting to see the strength we've seen in this market, and then we're bidding overs. That's definitely a sign that some of your originators may not be 100% comfortable with where they sit right now.
And that farmers are still bullish the corn market and leaving their corn in the bin.
Yeah, I think there's a fair amount of that. I think a lot of farmers are sitting here thinking, we're going to make them come after the corn. They've got a little bit of money in their pocket. Even if they sold a fair amount of corn last fall at, $5 and $6, $5.50, whatever the price might have been, that was better than what they'd done in quite some time. And with as cheap as the 21 crop went in the ground, now there's a fair amount of cash reserves on hand for producers that they hadn't been accustomed to. So they can be a little more tight-fisted than maybe what they had been for several years. So I do think there's a certain element there. You will talk to some of your country grain elevators that'll say they have a fair amount of corn on hand, yet it's the end user, in my opinion, that's really trying to make sure that they get that steady flow of bushels. And if you do end up kind of opening this E15 thing up over the summer, there's no doubt that you could have a little extra demand at some of your ethanol facilities as well. And it sure is nice to see this crude oil market rallying back up, because some of those folks are talking about increased margins by the day right now.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. A reminder again that the markets are closed on Friday in observance of the Easter holiday and Good Friday. We'll bring you Commodity Week during this slot tomorrow. Well, the planting season is upon us, and there's one item that farmers across the state of Illinois, other parts of the Midwest, might not be thinking about at this point. However, there will be a few that had some issues with the seed corn maggot last year. Nick Sider now joins us to talk about those issues. Hi, Nick. Thanks for being with us. What can you tell me about the seed corn maggot?
Seed corn maggot is an insect that we actually had a lot of trouble with in Illinois last year in 2021. Some in corn, but especially in soybean that were planted early. What happens with this insect, it feeds on the germinating seeds, particularly if there's a little bit of delay in emergence, a little bit of decay that gets in there. And last year, we had a lot of beans planted early while these flies were active, and then we had slow temperatures while those seeds were germinating. What that does, it slows down development of those seeds and gives the seed corn maggot more time to sort of tee off on them to cause that damage.
What is it that makes this an issue for some crops?
Crops are especially vulnerable to seed corn maggot when they're planted during the peak period of adult emergence, and that's going to occur in central Illinois over the next week between now and about April 18th or so. In northern Illinois, it's likely to occur towards the end of April.
Is there anything else, any other risk factors that farmers need to be aware of as it's related to this seed corn maggot?
Additional risk factors for seed corn maggot are when you're planting into high organic matter, when you're using a green manure or livestock manure, and if you're planting into freshly tilled ground. So particularly if you're doing those things while those flies are active and when it gets cold shortly after that, that's really kind of the perfect storm of issues that can give you problems with seed corn maggot. Saw a lot of that last year. Based on our planting progress so far, we don't expect to see nearly as much of that here in 2022.
Is this just an early spring or a planting time frame problem for farmers?
One thing I will point out, there are multiple generations of this insect, so we're not totally out of the woods after this first generation of seed corn maggot passes by. However, typically in Illinois, the worst problems occur when we're planting early during that first generation, because that's when that adult and ultimately that larval activity occurs along with cool temperatures.
Hey, thanks, Nick. Nick Sider is an Extension field crops entomologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He says seed treatments can prevent seed corn maggots, but that last year a lot of damage occurred in treated fields. This year that means farmers will need to scout. Again, high pest populations, delayed emergence, and wet conditions can all compromise seed treatment performance on the insect. The bad news here is actually that there's no rescue treatment available. The only management decision to make after seed corn maggot damage has occurred is to assess whether all or part of the field needs to be replanted. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Carl Zuloff. He is a professor emeritus from The Ohio State University. Carl, thank you for being with us. You and the folks here on this campus have penned an article that's up on the FarmDoc Daily website entitled Monopoly Pricing Power and Fertilizer Prices. I am sure that many people will have read this with great deal of interest. I'm wondering why it is that you wanted to bring this question up of monopoly power and pricing of fertilizer.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion of fertilizer prices, and in that public discussion of fertilizer prices, and in that discussion, there's often the point made that there are so few producers of fertilizer, both in the U.S. and around the world, that it sure looks like they could be monopoly pricing power going on and that they're raising the prices. So that was the principal reason for writing the article. The second principal reason was this is monopoly power has had a long history in the U.S. going back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, long history in economics. And we wanted to summarize what over 100 years of investigation by economics has the key points that have emerged from that long-term investigation of monopoly pricing power.
On that note, is just having a few individual or even one entity within an area sufficient to call it a monopoly?
If you define a monopoly as a single firm, then a single firm would be a monopoly. Economists would use it in terms of the type of pricing power, not the number of firms. And the long history of investigation by economics clearly says that you cannot associate monopoly pricing power, which is defined in economics as the ability to raise prices in a sustained manner above the cost of production. So we would call abnormal prices or abnormal profits would result from that. To obtain abnormal profits, it is not appropriate to associate it with the number of firms in the industry. So if there's just a few firms, it is inappropriate to conclude that monopoly power necessarily exists in that industry.
Why is it the case? What are the things that might happen which cause monopoly pricing not to be in play?
There are the history of investigation suggests that there are three principal reasons for why you need to be cautious about associating the number of firms in an industry with the existence of monopoly pricing power and therefore abnormal profits. And those three are you need to consider, are there substitutes? The second is there economies of size in producing the goods? And the third is, are there a number of barriers? In terms of substitutes, what economics would say is, do consumers have an option? And if they have that option, if you try to raise the price as a firm, consumers can move to that option and therefore avoid the higher prices. Now, what we mean by substitutes here is not a number of products, like the number of makes of cars. It's a distinct different product. And the classic example is the emergence of automobiles and gasoline-powered trucks at the turn of the 19th century and what that did to the competitiveness with respect to transportation and the railroads. Barriers to entry means that the firms in the industry have some way to keep other firms out so that if they would raise the price or restrict supply or partition demand, other firms could not enter and produce the product and therefore defeat the barrier and lower the price. Technologies, economies of scale is how much does the cost of production go down as the amount of output increases.
And there's one other thing about the economies of scale or size. I take it that makes abnormal profits sometimes not exist.
Actually, economies of size, all three of the factors that I mentioned are critical to the existence of abnormal pricing and abnormal profits. Economies of size, I think, is one of the more interesting ones because what you can show is that even if abnormal pricing exists, users of the product could be better off with that abnormal pricing than if you were to create more competition and do away with the abnormal profits. And the reason is because if an industry has very steeply declining cost curves, so that if you expand output of an individual firm, you really drive the cost of production down, and then you come in and you say, nope, you're making abnormal profits, we're going to force you to diversify, we're going to break the firm up, we're going to create more competition, what you do is you drive the production back up the cost of production curve. So that even though if you go from one to several firms, they may no longer be making abnormal profits, but the cost of production is so much higher that the user could end up paying more after the competition is introduced than they did when somebody had monopoly power. And I think this is really important in economic policy, Todd, that you consider, if I did something, could I make the situation worse? I'm not saying that breaking a firm up would necessarily make the situation worse if you create more competition, but there's a very distinct possibility that that could happen if you do not take into account what the production function looks like and what the economies of scale are.
Is there anything that the nation needs to do in order to better understand how the fertilizer industry works?
We need to have really good analysis of the competitive structure of the industry, both in terms of what are the substitutes, how viable are the substitutes, what are the barriers that actually exist, and I think critically, what is the role of technology in the sector? What are the economies of sizes? You would want to tend to think that there's a very high startup cost in the fertilizer industry. In other words, it costs a lot of money to put a fertilizer plant into production and then to keep it into production. And it's not just the physical capital in that, it's the technological knowledge that you have to do that. Large entry cost, large startup cost tend to be associated with fairly substantial economies of size. So I think one of the really big questions that people need to ask themselves when they talk about fertilizer prices, and I fully understand why fertilizer prices are a topic. They're substantially higher than they were a year ago. But we need to ask ourselves, what are the economies of size in the industry, and how does that affect the pricing that you get? Otherwise, if you addressed it and didn't consider cost of production and technological size of production, you might end up causing the price of fertilizer to actually go up when you think that you're bringing it down. And that's something that policy always has to worry about. Are you trying to do the right thing and you end up doing the wrong thing?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Carl Zuloff is an agricultural economist emeritus from The Ohio State University. Let's take a quick look at the weather forecast across the Midwest. We'll start in Fargo, North Dakota, where it's going to be cold. They'll have sunshine Friday and Saturday, but otherwise snow again Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Wet with rain on Wednesday and Thursday. Into Minneapolis, Minnesota, sunshine Friday and Saturday. Wet and cold for the rest of the week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, all a chance of rain. Highs in the low 40s for that period with them. Lincoln, Nebraska, a little better. Sunshine Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The highs in the upper 50s to low 60s. And in Springfield, Illinois, we'll have sunshine on Saturday, maybe some showers on Sunday. Monday, Tuesday should be clear. Wednesday, more showers here. And in Des Moines, Iowa, Friday, Saturday, clear. Sunday, showers. Monday, clear. Tuesday, Wednesday, some more showers. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.